The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory.
Messages of Hope. Messages of Hope.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm so excited. The Messages of Hope Tour 2021 is underway again. Ty and I are on the road for the next 5 months. We're 1 week into this trip, and today finds us in Picayune, Mississippi. How about that? Now, why would we come to this little town? I'll tell you why. Because the lovely, the delightful, and lovable Ingrid Hunkala lives here. And Ingrid's been on my show. We met at an IANS conference. She's a near-death experiencer who is a walking angel. Anybody who has the pleasure of meeting her knows what beautiful energy she has. So we're spending a couple of days here in their neck of the woods. And we all just went with, she and her husband Mike, Ty and I went to Bay St. Louis for lunch today, right on the water. The whole waterfront had been wiped out by Hurricane Katrina, and they've rebuilt it, and it's just delightful. It was almost like hurricane weather down there today, wind blowing, white caps on the water. So that's a little bit of the background of where I am today, and I'm really not that far from our guest today. Our guest is another dear friend of Ty's and mine, Judson Emmons. He's an author. That's a kind of new thing for him. And yes, we're going to be discussing his book, which is called White Crow, How Those in the Afterlife Saved Those Left Behind. It's a novel. But really, I just wanted all of you, my dear friends, to meet this dear friend, because his story is so heartwarming. His energy is so lovely. And I just no, we're going to have a delightful chat today. So, Judson, it's my pleasure to spend the next hour talking with you. Welcome to the show.
Suzanne, it's quite an honor. I hope Ty is listening so I can give him a shout out. But it's such an honor. I'm so humbled to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And Ty is always listening, so I'm sure that he heard that. Gosh, you, I said, are not too far from us. You are in beautiful Tuscumbia, Alabama, next state over. And we have had the pleasure, Ty and I, of visiting you 3 times in Tuscumbia after we met. We'll talk about how we met. But why don't you tell everyone the claim to fame of Tuscumbia?
Tuscumbia is the birthplace of Helen Keller. Worldwide recognition for her accomplishments here.
That's right. You took us to her birthplace. Well, not the, is it her birthplace or where she?
It is. It's her birthplace.
Yeah. And so beautiful to walk the grounds there. And most people don't know she actually had quite the spiritual side.
She truly did. If we had time, and I'm not sure we will, but maybe someday we can go into that.
Yeah, you actually sent me 2 books of hers, and I learned a lot from that. So you spent your whole life in Tuscumbia. Tell us a little bit about your background, your working career.
Well, you're right. I spent my whole life here, and I think that's probably due to divine intervention because of the pathways that we have gone down and the journey that we have taken. But I was a child welfare supervisor for 29 of my 33-year career with the Alabama Department of Human Resources. I supervised those who investigated child abuse and neglect and the foster care program and protective services for children in their own homes and adoptions. So that's kind of my background for the 2 books that I've written, and it is involved somewhat in White Crow, not to the extent that my first book was, but that's my career, and coincidentally, it came into play. My abilities to know what the Department of Human Resources did involved us quite exquisitely with our child, Nadia, who we got involved with from another county because of her mother's involvement with the Department of Human Resources. So it was quite intertwined.
And we have had the honor and pleasure of getting to know both of your two adopted daughters, Nadia and Haley, and I'd love to talk a little bit about them because this show is about hope and usually about talking about the other side, but you gave such hope to those two girls. Why don't you tell us about Nadia, first of all?
I would be glad to. I think the thing that's going to be...
Could I stop a second?
We sure.
have to acknowledge your beautiful, wonderful wife, Donna Jo, who is just the most lovely woman. And I know that you two are a total partnership in these adoptions all the way. So I just didn't want to leave her out of this. If she's an angel on earth as well. So
exactly. She is. Yeah. I'm almost this summer. I will be 72 years young. And this is the most giving human being I have ever run across in my entire life.
Mm. Mm.
If it and truth be known, if it was not for her, we would probably never have gotten involved with Nadia, and I know we probably wouldn't have gotten involved with Haley because of her background with Haley when Haley was in elementary school. So Donna is at the root of all this. She's taken me by the hand and showed me how those who live on this earth are supposed to behave.
Hmm. So tell us about Nadia.
All right. Well, our little Nadia, who is now, she'll be 15, if you can believe that, in September.
Wow.
Yeah, really. She's had quite the journey. She was born in September of 06. She came across our radar as a result of Donna's involvement with a local cancer center. She was the office manager in Florence at a cancer center, and she was asked by a Florence church who was reaching out to try to find employment for this mother, this young mother who had no income, had no place to live, and that was Nadia's mother. And through Donna's willingness to open the doors there and try to create an income for this lady, we became knowledgeable of her mom and the issues that she had. She, at that time, was being monitored by the Lauderdale Department of Human Resources because of... At birth, Nadia and her mother tested positive for drugs, and they were concerned at the hospital regarding mom's mental status and her ability to successfully parent. Mm-hmm. And those concerns were very founded, and so they opened up a protective service case on her, which means, and I bet you do have some social workers in your following, so they'll know what I'm talking about. But that means that they're going to provide in-home services, find her a place, provide daycare, counseling, therapy, whatever the department realizes is necessary to provide a safe environment for Nadia. So that having been said, after several months, I think 4 or 5 months at that time, she self-reported, thank goodness, that she had shaken Nadia when Nadia wouldn't stop crying. So at that point, the department is required to, by law, to initiate a safety plan of some sort. Well, lo and behold, the mother says, I want Miss Donna to be my safety. Everybody wants Miss Donna to be their safety plan. But anyway, she tapped Donna to be her safety plan for Nadia. And in this instance, what that meant and required was that Nadia would come to live with us at age 4 months, and we would provide the required safety piece of it, and the department would try to provide services for mom to get her to a point where Nadia could be reunited. And that's we were on board with that. We thought that was a good thing to do. We were all for family reunification, family preservation, but after several months, I want to say 7 or 8, Suzanne, mother just proved that she could not get it done, and then we were at a real crossroads. They confided to us that if you all have any interest in this child, now's the time to have that discussion, and if you want to do this, get an attorney. So,
well, I'm going to have to fast forward. We have so much to cover, but you have had her all this time then, and she is such a beautiful, intelligent, polite young woman.
And looking back on it, I think that decision came from us, not because we really, our left brains didn't think we could do this, because, heck, I was going on 58 and Donald's 47. We were going to have income issues. And if I was going to raise her to adulthood, that put me in my late 70s. So we did it. Looking back on it, I feel like it was because of the challenges that Nardi was going to endure in the coming years, physical, mental, and emotional, that we could deal with, that biological mom didn't have the means nor the parenting skills to deal with.
Wow. Definitely divine intervention. Your intervention with Haley got you in several newspapers, and when you reached out to me, I had never heard such a story. Could you tell us that one, please?
It's a little, okay, I'd be love to. It's a little detail too, but Haley, back in 2010, the local newspaper here received a letter from a lady named Rose who said, I'm disabled with cerebral palsy. Both of my parents have died. I'm in danger of losing everything. Can you help me? Well, by the time the reporter got into the story, she couldn't find Rose. Rose didn't respond, but she did start talking. But the reporter started talking to experts in the area regarding people in this predicament. What happens if they don't have anybody to care for them? And she was told during those interviews about a 21-year-old who had just been placed in a nursing home who had cerebral palsy. Long story short, the reporter contacted Haley and got the first story, came out on the front page, and when we saw that in the spring of 2010, we set up an interview with Haley. Donna had known her, like I said previously, in a elementary school capacity, being a case aide for Haley when she was 5 or 6. We used to bring her home all the time, and contact situation with us and Haley was interrupted for many, many years when we lost track of Haley. She'd been passed around with all the relatives that they had access to, and then all of a sudden we see her in a nursing home, and so we got permission from the newspaper to go visit her, and so we did.
Well, here you are visiting this now 21-year-old girl who you knew when she was in kindergarten. She's 21, and she's in a nursing home with nothing but geriatric patients, right? The only young person there.
That's it. And then Nadia went down there with us, and we took her into the room in this plain white room with a white curtain separating the patients in their beds. And it was really, as you can imagine, depressing. The only thing Haley had on, as far as decoration, was two yellowed strips of newspaper on her wall of somebody that she had, I think it was an athlete of some sort that she liked. Nadia crawled right up in the bed and without any hesitation said, "Hello, sissy." I know. And so from there, Donna and I had these knowing looks back and forth, like, how are we going to let this stand? And I can remember on the way home, it was as quiet a ride as I've ever been in. And she was only 5 minutes away from us in a nursing home, which we had not known. But after the first visit, we started talking like, man, how are we going to let this? I would have to take down every mirror in my house if I knew that I let that child stay down there. And I could have done
something about it. And she wasn't a child. She's an adult, 21 years old.
She was 21, yeah. Still, she was a child to us, but she's very childlike in so many ways. But you're right, she was 21 years old.
And you took her.
Yes, we did. We had a weekend for a trial just to see what it would be like. We had no idea what her day-to-day needs were. We didn't know if what we could do and what we couldn't do.
So I would love for you to briefly describe to everyone. Judson, if you could just describe for everyone, here you are 61 years old, and you have now decided to basically adopt a 21-year-old woman with cerebral palsy. What did her daily care require of you, both of you?
Well, we really didn't know the extent of her disability until we had that trial weekend before we accepted her. But when she's laying in bed, Suzanne, she cannot roll over. She cannot pull the covers up. She's just there.
Wow.
So, you know, a choice had really crossed our paths here. I'm 61, Donna's almost 51. Do we take this leap of faith? We don't even have a bed. We don't have a bedroom for her. She would have to sleep in a lounger. So we jumped. This is going to require Donna, by the way, to quit her job. So the only income we'd have would be my retirement. I'm still a year away from Social Security.
Wow.
Yeah, so something was pushing us. We couldn't identify it. We just knew this is crazy. But as you will hear later, things started happening that we had no idea were even possible to happen. But we did it. We brought her home. And then it hit us, Suzanne. We knew the family history, but we really never focused on it. And we brought it up to Haley as soon as she got here. This is the same home that Haley's mother grew up in.
Oh, my gosh. Huh. Yeah. The one you're living in.
Yes, I bought it from Haley's great-grandparents, the ones that she wanted a reading for.
Anybody else have goosebumps?
I bought the house in 1985, and it was her great-grandparents. And they had adopted Haley's mother because one of their sons had had her and wasn't taking good care of her. So yeah, this is the divine intervention that seems to follow us wherever we go.
Yeah, but you act on it, Judson. You two are just saints. So getting more with the theme of our Messages of Hope show here. So 6 years ago, we met when you reached out to me because you wanted a reading for Haley. And I remember this was just so unusual, and I knew that you would have to set up everything for her to have the reading because of her disabilities. You would have to be there in the room with her. I didn't know you. This was going to be by computer. Would you tell me, I don't even remember. I don't remember the story at all, but how did you come to even think of a reading for her, and how did you find me?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It was about that time period after all the publicity and everything had died down, and we had gotten into the day-to-day living and of taking care of her. By the way, I was her primary caretaker simply because I was the most physically fit of the two choices. And basically what that consisted of was getting her from bed to her chair, to the toilet, back to the chair, back to bed, over and over. And after several months, it was actually 3 to 4 years of
and
what
it's
I'm
coming back
now.
To me now. I'm starting to remember the depression.
Yeah. She began to evolve into this awareness that she had taken two people really out of their own lives. She's talking about me and Donna. And she began to feel so guilty. And I had not expected this. Donna had not expected this. But she kept wanting to say, I can't wait for my heavenly body. I've taken y'all away from the life you deserve. And she felt so guilt-ridden, and this began to manifest itself in her demeanor and her interactions, and she wasn't as jubilant as she was when she first came in. So, and coincidentally, at that time, while taking care of her, I was doing some research on some things like near-death experiences, reincarnation, and I accidentally stumbled on mediumship, and your name attracted me. Was attractive to me because I had a friend who last name was G-E-I-S-E when I was growing up in high school. And so I plugged into you, studied your work, and I'm not sure if I ordered Wolf at that time or not. But anyway, I emailed you in January of 2015, and you came through. You really did. And the reading was good for Haley. It let her know that the two people who raised her and contributed most of her life and who loved her more than anybody were still with her. And that helped.
I remember now. I remember was it her grandmother or her great grandmother? No, it was her grandmother, right?
Her great grandparents. She always calls them her grandparents, but they're her technically her great-grandparents.
And I remember thinking, boy, I need evidence here because I need her to know you had told me that she was wanting to die. And I can't help her, but her loved ones across the veil can help her. So we need evidence so that nobody thinks I'm just saying these nice things to help save her life. And they came through, Judson.
That's right. Two things stood out. I don't have the notes here before me on that. I think Donna has them. But I remember that you all talked about something regarding a xylophone when she was either in first grade or kindergarten. She used to bang away on a xylophone. And Haley says, I'm not sure I remember that. And Donna was with her. She said, oh, my goodness, yes, I was your case aide. You drove me crazy with that xylophone.
I remember. I remember that. I was so happy that Donna Jo was there to validate that. And,
Yes, beautiful. And one other thing that stood out was a description by you of her great-grandmother as being, quote, fluffy, which meant she's a little heavy. So that was really on target.
But also, I don't want to go into this, but I know that she also received apologies from I remember her grandparents talking about Haley's parents and the way they had treated her and just all the things that meant
That's
a lot
true.
To her.
That's exactly right. They had trouble with her parents had trouble with drugs and homelessness and they just, as a matter of fact, since you bring that up, they're still in the area and have always been within 2, 3, 4 miles of Haley and have just turned their backs on her.
And I remember the grandmother stating, you know, I see all of this, and that is not the way that it's supposed to work. But she said it very lovingly. And do you remember any difference in Haley after the reading? Did it fit the bill for you?
It did. Haley's cognitive abilities are not significantly impaired. She has trouble with math, but her ability to remember and converse and communicate are intact, and yes, it definitely helped. There was an awareness that I'm not alone. The people I loved here the most are still with me and can communicate with me. Now, I'm not saying she's been able to do that because of her other inabilities, but she relishes that awareness.
Yeah, I remember just being so blown away by her. Ty and I remember getting a little teddy bear and sending it to her, and we started emailing, and she would write back, Miss Suzanne, you know, in that very polite Southern style, and we just knew we had to meet all of you, and it's been a blessing to us to get to know all of you.
Oh, it has, too.
In the second half of the show, we're going to talk more about a couple other readings that we did. And I definitely want to talk about your book, White Crow. But could you just tell everybody how Haley's doing now?
Oh, yes. Haley is not living here now. After about 5 or 6 years and I began to have hip problems, we began discussions because we didn't want to have to put Haley back in a nursing home. We started this discussion with the gentleman who is the man who came down here to help us with Haley. He is the
benefactor.
Benefactor. This is something that was unpredictable, obviously. And she agreed to this option. He offered his childhood home, and he offered around-the-clock care. And he's doing that every single month. And she's now living the life she never thought she would have. Her best friend, who lives in Birmingham, has cerebral palsy. She's married and in an apartment, and Haley's been so jealous for all of her life. So this is another blessing that we couldn't have predicted, her living independently here. She is in heaven.
And we got together one of the times, and Haley came over and joined us for lunch. She had us a special wheelchair, and it's just amazing. And the love that you all radiate to her and is just tremendous.
Well, thank you. With the newspaper coverage that we had here, it became known to a gentleman, a retired Harvard professor in Florence. He subsequently contacted NBC NBC came down, did a story for their segment, Making a Difference. And this aired across the nation, which it enlightened everyone about caring for others. We get correspondence all the time from people like that. It was on the Huffington Post. Haley had become a celebrity. She relished that. That, in addition to your reading, has really heightened her awareness of how good life can be. And the gentleman that came down to offer his childhood home is the younger brother of that Harvard professor who was in the last 6 months of his life when he contacted NBC on our behalf. But he had his brother's estate now, and he wanted to come down to help, meet Haley, and he did that.
Wow. It's just so heartening. I mean, you spent a whole career dealing with some unimaginable stories and tragedies, so to have two successes may seem like a little bit, but each life you touch is just tremendous.
We received correspondence all the time in these early stages that I just referred to from people all around the country. So, and in addition to the gentleman who, he built a room on here for Haley. The community came together with another gentleman in town to open
and we have
an
to
account.
Go to a break, Judson, so I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to continue for another half hour after this. So everybody, don't go away. We're going to get into more of the mediumship and more of this beautiful family story.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
Yes, indeed. In fact, we're in Central Time Zone now, and I just looked down at the clock ticking by, and it was 3:33:33. Now, that's a good number. We're talking with my dear friend Judson Emmons about his two adopted daughters that he and Donna Jo lovingly gave a home to. And I wanted to tell you all, Tuscumbia, Alabama, where Judson is right now, is right next to the town of Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And if you've ever heard the song Sweet Home Alabama, you will have heard of Muscle Shoals. So, Judson, we want to wrap up that last little segment there about adopting Haley, about the beautiful.
Yes, I think I left off where she's independent now. We see and talk to her every week, and she does have access to the van to come visit. But the gentleman who pays for that is the younger brother of a gentleman I have yet to mention, but I will now. And he was a retired Harvard professor living in a neighborhood in Florence across the river. And he was in the last 6 months of his fight with prostate cancer. And as a result of the newspaper stories here, he took it upon himself to reach out to NBC and inform them of what was going on here with Haley and our story with what we were doing for her. And subsequently, they sent a crew down here to follow Haley for a day. They even went to our state capitol to talk with the Medicaid commissioner because of the ongoing problems that put people like Haley into. But I wanted everyone to know that NBC came down, did the story. Subsequently, after he died, which was so sad after we learned that, his younger brother came down to meet us and Haley and offered to help. He subsequently talked us into adding a room on for Haley. And keep in mind, if you remember, she was simply living in a recliner. But yep. She said it was the most comfortable thing she'd ever had. But up until then, when she got her room, she was in seventh heaven.
So you allowed them to build a room onto your home for her.
He did.
Yeah, beautiful. Wow.
Yeah, stuff you can't predict,
like this.
And it is divine intervention.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So now we've gotten to know each other, and Donna Jo asked for a reading. Let's jump into the mediumship aspects here now. And do you recall any specifics of that she doesn't mind sharing? Because I can't remember too much. She has a brother, right? Is that it?
Yes, he was Down syndrome. Actually, it was an older brother.
Across the veil. The brother across the veil came through.
Yes. I want to share one thing with you about that. For a couple of years prior to his death, every time he would come up and meet, when we would show up, and Donna and he would get together, he would rub her little tummy and say, "You're going to have a Chinese baby." Now, people don't know that Nadia happens to be Asian, but I thought that was amazing coincidence.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? I never heard that one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And I remember he came through in the reading, and I didn't know anything about him having Down syndrome. He sure was just loving, and there was some great evidence there. And a wonderful reading for Donna Jo.
Oh, it was. You talked to Donna Jo about what a powerful force he was. You compared it to Wolf, about how powerful he was.
Mm.
He came through that he was an Auburn football fan. Which he was. He was a devout Auburn football fan.
Beautiful. Well, he's the one that got it through, so I'm grateful for that. I remember Donna Jo was just ecstatic to connect with him, which was lovely. And it's funny, you know, I don't know if people who meet me expect a reading. You guys never really overtly asked, and it was just a pleasure to offer that, but I had never given one to you. And it was second to last visit we came down there and offered to do a reading for you. Do you remember what happened, how that came about when you and Ty and I went for a run at the state park where we were camping?
I do. It was right along the Tennessee River. We were, of course, going to have the reading after our run. And, of course, I knew I was going to expect my father to come through. That's who I wanted to talk with for sure. And my mother had just passed, and I wasn't sure because it was so recent if that would even be possible. And I remember as we were cooling down, walking back to your RV, you were asking about how family was. And then you said something about, "Do I sense that your mother has passed?" And I said, "I kind of wondered if you were going to ask me that. And if you were going to ask me that, I was going to say, if you're going to ask how my mother was, I was going to say, she's never been better."
You didn't want to give away before the reading that your mother passed, because that's right. We were running when she dropped in on me, because I knew your mother was still alive. We had talked about her in previous visits, but you never told me she passed because you were holding out to see if she would come through in the reading. Yeah.
That was outstanding.
I don't recall the reading, but since she dropped in on us on that run, I'm sure she must have come through in the reading as well.
She did. She had some really, really, and I wasn't expecting much from her if she came through at all, because of, I understand that when one passes, it takes a while to get to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. But
she
was
good. Through.
Yeah. So it's very interesting to me. Here you are in this little town in Alabama, the heart of the Bible Belt. We have listeners from all over the world on this show, but that's just an area where you'll find Christian churches about every other block. And so mediumship is not one that's normally discussed in the area. And here you are diving into mediumship and the afterlife. What do you attribute that interest?
It was actually your readings, the outstanding reading that you gave me, where my father and my mother both came through, and it was several significant hits. Would this be a good time to go into some of that?
Well, if you'd like to, we always love to hear the evidence.
Sure. I can remember, this is regarding my father. He died in 1980. Your impression of him was one that said he made you want to sit up straight. You know, he had a real outstanding personality. You got to do the right thing. Very militaristic almost.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me that you sensed that he worked with his hands, that there was nothing he couldn't fix. I do recall that. He was a machinist.
Mm-hmm.
And another piece that came through was the fact that he was a football player and that he had told you that those were his glory days, I recall. And that he showed you a stuffed tiger. And the story behind that is the football team was the Deschler High School Tigers.
Oh, no kidding. That's good.
Yeah.
Way to go, Dad.
Bill, William came up, and his name was William. He told you that I still had a little more hair than he did. And he talked about my brother being fairly stubborn, which is accurate. And at that particular time was acutely accurate because they were in a position of trying to sell a house, and he was stubbornly resisting some things going on at that point. Dad said to you that I should write another book, that I had another book in me, and that I ought to do it about the things I've been reading about, and don't worry what I think he or my mom might think about it. Just do what I want to do.
How about that? And yeah. You went on to do that.
That's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
So White Crow is your latest book, and it really surprised me when you came out with it, because first of all, to have a man writing a book about a female evidential medium as your protagonist is unusual, and somebody from the Bible Belt doing that again. I'm using stereotypes here. I'm the first to admit it, but you're breaking stereotypes, Judson. But the title of the book, White Crow.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. How many people have you heard who probably would have a real interest in pursuing at least the study of or learning more about mediumship, but because of their friends or their family who are very religious, they meet the opposition to even consider doing that. And we kind of have that conflict here with the medium and the local preacher. And it comes to a conclusion that I think will help people who are resistant to doing that to go on and do it.
Very good. I want to talk about that more, because when I read the book, you really go into the local preacher's resistance to a medium. And I mean, really confrontational, the kind of thing that most mediums shy away from. And that's why I don't openly just bring up the fact that I'm a medium until I feel out the environment. But there's a lot of conflict in the book. So I even hesitated to bring it on the show, but yet it does come to a beautiful conclusion. And it's very interesting the way you've done it. Let's talk about the title, The White Crow. The second I saw it, I knew what that meant, but I'm sure that some of the listeners don't know what that term refers to. Would you explain that for everybody?
Let's see. Back in the 1800s, that's when the organizations were founded. Yeah, these two organizations, I think there were the Society for Psychical Research, and in the United States, a sister organization, the American Society for Psychical Research. These organizations expressed their purpose of collecting data under laboratory conditions and a lot of things like that for the purpose of study, obviously. And these attracted eminent scientists from around the world, not the least of which was William James, listed on the American Psychological Association's top 10, I believe, most influential psychologists of the 20th century. He's the Harvard professor who was famous for stating, see if I get it right, in order to disprove the natural law that all crows are black, you need only find one white crow. And his meaning was specifically applying to mediumship, to mediums, in that all a scientist needed to do was discover and document just one genuine medium to disprove that all mediums are fraud. So I thought that would be a good title for this.
It's great.
This
it's
novel.
Great. And the character in your book does that. She's when I first read some of the evidence you brought through, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Because even though it's fiction, everything you depict in your book is exactly how mediumship works. And it was so clear to me, you've really done your research and accurately portrayed what mediumship is, how it works, and what some mediums go through.
Thank you. I like the characters in this book. They obviously they're earthy. They come to the reader with their own troubled past, their biases, their failures, and it shows the roads that they take, the roads they don't, all the stuff that they have to go through. But it shows how all these people from these various backgrounds can come together when the conditions are right, and for the greater good, I guess the best way to put it, the evolution that shows each one of them making this book. And I have to be honest with you, these characters, when I would sit down to write these earthy characters with all this history and all this baggage, would just take me by the hand and show me what I needed to do. I did not plan this book. I did not plan character development. I didn't plan the storyline. It's much like I've read other authors say when they reread their book, is that they don't feel like that they contributed to it. But before I would write every day, I would ask for guidance. I would ask for direction. I know that I wrote it, but I don't know where it came from.
That sounds like channeled writing.
Well, I've read a little bit about channeling, and it kind of reminds me of, what's his name? Sandler? Michael Sandler, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yep. He has that book on automatic writing experience. He's been on the show for that.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's what this is, but when I read this book, I'll pick it up and read it from time to time, just spot reading, you know, and I'll open it up and just wherever it opens up to, and I'll say, boy, that's well done.
And then I'm
not saying that to compliment me, but I am very impressed with the way most of this unfolded and how it appeals to a reader. And some of this stuff like 2 weeks before publication, I didn't even know how those in the afterlife saved those left behind. I hadn't thought about that, but
that's
it came
subtitle.
To me to put that
mm-hmm.
on the cover. And the way the epilogue was done, I thought, well, you can't do that, Judd. This is just not, that's too far out there to do the epilogue like I did it. But I have not had a complaint yet, so...
And how has this been received by people?
All the reviews that I've seen on Amazon they're really good, so I can't be disappointed. I'm very surprised and pleased, and I hope it speaks to some people who need to have that spoken to.
Absolutely. So have any of your friends or family members who didn't know that you were, quote, into mediumship been surprised by this?
I'm sure that they are. I haven't had direct contact, everybody really likes it. It's just, it makes an impact on people. And what I hope it does is it's going to be so entertaining that they can't put it down. And in the meantime, secondarily, gets them interested in pursuing more knowledge about medium and mediumship and what the reality really, really is. And how it can change your life. It's just life altering since I've had my reading with you and started studying.
Talk about that a minute, Judson. How has it changed your life?
Well, you've given me the ultimate get out of jail free card. You know, it's just like, you know, to use the Monopoly term. I'll always continue. My loved ones are still with me. Life is never ending. you know, why we have the term afterlife, I don't know.
It's the everlife, according to my guides, not the afterlife, okay. The everlife.
I can take that.
Yeah.
I can take that. I'm not the same man I was. I'm not sure who I'm going to end up being, but I know the man I'm not.
So you, as we mentioned before, you know, spending so many years of your career with some truly horrific stories of abuse of children and abusive situations for the families. I mean, people that abuse children are hurt themselves, not excusing their behavior at all. But how do you mesh what you know about the afterlife now with the kind of human life stories you've dealt with throughout your adult life?
Well, while I believe divine intervention is always at work, and it's always nudging me to do my highest good, of course, it's up to me to, when I choose to listen. And just like it's up to those parents who do to their children what they do or what they don't do for their children they should do, they don't make those choices. And so that's free will gone awry. You know, you get into mental illnesses, obviously, which is going to be something that, you know, I know the difficulty that those with mental illnesses can incur and have to live with, but we're talking about individuals who, you know, for lack of a better phrase, are just maybe some of them are here to give us an opportunity to reach out to them.
Hmm. What a beautiful point. And I so often hear from those who cross the veil who did deal with mental illness, and they're just clear as a bell when they get to the other side and they shed the body and they show me poor wiring. You know, the choices were influenced by crossed wires in the brain, that sort of thing. And as with everything, it's not judgment that they get across the veil by any others. It's just they're allowed to see the effects of their actions and see how they could have chosen differently. It gives us a different perspective on life here and now. You talked about some of the characters in your recent book being earthy. And boy, we didn't talk about your first book, Five Days in October. I loved that book, a novel. The story of a 13-year-old girl who attempted to escape the sexual abuse perpetrated by her father, the county circuit court judge. What a story. I couldn't put that one down, Judson. So I love how you create earthy characters, actually, with a positive spin at the end.
I know. I'm not sure what that is. It's just I have read some novelists who – those kind of writings appeal to me. I'm not sure if my 33-year career at DHR was a part of that, but I'm sure it's a small part. But both of these books, kind of, you know, there's a southern setting. There's almost anybody's read John Grisham probably will feel a little at home with these books. It's that kind of genre. And
When I was reading your White Crow and you were talking about the town of Sheffield, I thought, is this a made-up town? And I looked it up, and it's real. It's right across the river, right, from where
yeah,
you are.
Yes, it is. And that was one of the appeals that I thought I would stick with. Actually, the bus station was real during my youth. Jackson Highway is real. So a lot of it in there is real. Those in the area will recognize a lot of that. You've been in the 360 Grill, so you know that's real.
Yes, I do. The place you took us to dinner, very lovely. Yeah. Wow. So how has Donna Jo taken all of this, the mediumship path? I mean, we don't really talk about religion or much when we get together. I know you – well, doesn't – Nadia goes to a Christian school, right?
Well, she did. She did for about till sixth grade. We had to take her out because of and homeschool her because part of the problems that she incurred with some of her medicine that she needed for her arthritis caused some really, really bad symptoms, such as anxiety, depression, and things like that. But she was in a Christian school for a while, and of course I was raised in the church. Donna was raised in the church, and you ask about how is she with all of this, and I'm of course my hair. I approached this like my hair was on fire when I first started talking with you and learning about all this, and I just couldn't understand.
What do you mean by that?
I want to know why everyone is not wanting to get into this. This is the questions of mankind has asked ever since he came out of the cave. You know, what are we here for? What happens when we die? Where do we go? The meaning of life. And
but you weren't finding those
this
answers.
This all answered all of that for me.
Yeah, it sure does. And the beautiful thing is we can get those answers ourselves. Everybody who's listening can get those answers by going into meditation, trusting that you have guides and your own higher self has access to all of these answers. So we try to answer some of these on the show, but the tools are here for everybody to take to get these answers yourself. But it sure is fun to hear about it from others with the evidence to back it up.
Oh, I know. The especially when you can get into all aspects of mediumship and this phenomenon, to me, dovetails nicely into the scientific explanation of the universe, being this heaving sea of energy, this vast quantum field. Well, then once you understand that we're just all electrical charges, all this makes sense, and you see how easily doable all of this is. You know, we're just all connected in this invisible web. Now, I know I'm branching out into the subject.
Oh, you're talking my language, dear friend. Keep going.
I mentioned to you earlier offline about Lynn McTaggart's fantastic book entitled The Field, The Quest for the Secret Force of the Universe. Anybody that wants to really know the nuts and bolts of the universe, that's the book you need to pick up.
That's the very first book I read over a dozen years ago when I started tapping in, and I said, how is this possible? And I started reading this, and like you, Judson, I said, why isn't everybody talking about this? This explains so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And these packets of quantum energy that constantly exchanging information in this exhaustible energy sea is just, then it all makes sense.
Judson, we're going to run out of time just as we get into that topic, but it's maybe I'll have to get Lynn McTaggart on the show, but why not?
Well,
but
you
in
let
the
me
meantime,
know when you do. I'll get a front row seat.
Okay. Well, it has been such a pleasure talking with you, everybody. I hope you'll run out and get a copy of White Crow and Judson's other book that are just a delight to read. 5 Days in October is the title, and you can get those online. Judson, thank you so much for sharing your beautiful story with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Michelle Phillips, a celebrity makeup artist, beauty expert, self-confidence coach, and Hay House author. My podcast, Beauty and Beyond, is the place for women navigating the challenges of the aging process. Listen in for my professional advice, as well as my expert guests, as we share valuable tips, practical tools, and empowering resources to help you not only look amazing, but also live an amazing life. Part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts.